This story is called The Good Life. Sitting by the front windows and counting automobiles, the boy was glad it was Sunday. There wasn't as much work, and there were more cars than on other days. His straight mouth and blue eyes showed concentration, but not any emotion. Harry was waiting for a green pickup truck that had dropped him off there at some lazy point in his past. He knew that he hadn't always been at the orphanage, but he couldn't remember how long it had been since his father had told him to be good and wait until he could come back for him. The truth was that he hadn't learned to keep track of time very well. "Harry, you gonna play ball?" It was Roger. Harry didn't mind Roger, because he knew he could kick the shit out of him any time that he needed to. "How many guys you got?" He wouldn't have bothered to ask, but it was Sunday, and the car count could go over 100. "7 on a side with you." Harry's expression cracked into a grin that moved his ears back. It was a good number. It was afternoon, and probably no one else was coming there that day. Who cared what he wrote down for the numbers of the week, and then added them up and threw out the paper when there were 7 totals of cars to be added? As soon as he hit the door, Harry started to run. The speed, the wind, and the side blur of immobile things moving past him got him excited. In Father Bishop's office, there were no lights on, and the drapes were drawn. Harry was waiting. He sat in the straight chair that was meant to remind him why he was there. Harry looked at the leather chairs and couch and tried to squint up an image of his father coming back for him, but he knew that he wasn't allowed out of the punishment chair. Father Bishop opened the door with an unconscious quietness. His face registered placid annoyance at the sight of Harry. "So, you're the ungrateful piece of trash that hits other boys on Sunday." Harry knew that he was under scrutiny and that anything he did would be the wrong thing. He kept his eyes on the floor. The shiny black shoes were standing next to him. The priest grabbed his left ear and pulled Harry to his feet. "Are you pretending not to hear me?" He grimaced, but did not cry out. "No, Father." The hand let go of his ear, wound up, and smacked against the side of his head. "You know the rules against fighting, Harold. Is there anything that you want to tell me before you were punished for what you did?" "I'm sorry." Harry hesitated and raised his head until he was looking straight at the priest. "That I didn't get to finish the fight." The priest rocked back on his heels, reached for his strap. "This time, you'll lower your pants in order to help you with your penance, Harold." Harry was too sore to be comfortable, but the tears that he hadn't been able to stuff back were dried on his face and arms. Roger stuck his head down from the overhead bunk. The dark-haired boy was more curious than concerned. "He strapped your ass until it bled, didn't he? Did he get Jack, too?" "Right after he was done with you." "Did you grab anything from supper?" "Couldn't get away with anything but some bread," said Roger. "Bread's all right. You'd do it for me. Why did Jack start with you, Harry?" "I'll get him back," said Harry. 2. The orphanage had one room that was set aside to teach the boys to read, write, and do arithmetic. The rest of their education was confined to religion and manual labor. Harry was never really happy at the sight of Father Bishop, but he knew how the priest worked his system. Boys who had broken the rules were separated from the rest and given time to think about what they had done. Then they were strapped and sent back. There were no favorites in the home. The squealers were strapped just as hard as the boys who had broken the rules. Harry didn't know if it was cruel, but it seemed fair. He wasn't usually frightened when Father Bishop came to the schoolroom to get him. He had been strapped again yesterday for getting even with Jack. The welts on his rear were still sore, but he could move okay. And he wasn't letting on that anything was bothering him, complaining about the effects of being strapped. Just got you strapped again. "I want you to come with me, Harold." They were going to the priest's office, but Bishop stopped him outside the door and gave him an inspection. "Tuck in your shirt properly and comb your hair." The priest watched as Harry smoothed his shirt around the waist of his pants. The priest's eyes waited while the boy finger-combed his thin, blonde hair. Harry tried to hide his excitement at the sight of William Brandt, but seeing his father overwhelmed him, and unknowingly the boy's mouth dropped open. Brandt was a large man with a barrel chest and the telltale redness of hard drinking on his face. "I come to get you, Harry." Father Bishop ushered Harry into one of the leather chairs and then sat down behind his desk. "You left Harry with us about 2.5 years ago, Mr. Brandt. We think that you'll find him a different boy than he was then. He's had the chicken pox and several fevers that have gone on for weeks and just run their course. He still doesn't eat very well, and he seems to have a mean streak in him. We've attempted to address that behavior with a moderate amount of success. Harold has grown to expect to be sternly corrected when he misbehaves. We suggest that you continue that practice so that the work that we've started here won't be lost. The Lord has taught us that children profit from the strap. I hope that he hasn't been too much trouble for you, Father, but you can be sure that the missus and me won't go against anything that you've done. We're here more for the convenience of the needy, Mr. Brandt. Please require that Harold continue to go to church regularly. It is the small price that we ask in exchange for our services, and of course, whatever donation that you've decided upon for the time that he spent here." Brandt looked over at his younger son. "Ain't really got much I can give you now, Father, but as soon as money comes in, we'll be sending something along." The first thing that surprised Harry was that there was no green pickup truck parked in front of the orphanage. The second surprise was that his father lived close enough for the two of them to walk to his new home. The man watched his son walking alongside of him. The boy was tall for 8 years old, and Brandt saw traces of his old wife in Harry's face. The insight caused an uncomfortable emotion and made him feel like he had something to say. He didn't like to feel that he had to speak to his children. "I'm married. When you talk to her, you'll call her Mrs. Brandt. There are other children from the missus and from me, and they have been there for a while now. Is that where Tommy is?" "I'm not answering questions, Harry. I'm just telling you what you need to know. Brant waited and saw that the priest was right. The boy put his head down, and Brant knew that there wouldn't be any more questions about his past. The past wasn't there, and so there was nothing to talk about. 3. Robert Tuck was working out of a vacant lot down the street from the Brant apartment. Its debris made it a magnet for neighborhood kids. Harry discovered the lot on the first day of his new freedom. It was late spring, and the rest of the kids had a couple of weeks of school left before vacation. Harry was happier than he could ever remember being. All of the local events were new to him, and he set out to learn the area with the curiosity of an explorer. When Harry first met Robert Tuck, he was stripping car seats. Harry watched the man cut the seats open with a knife and separate the horsehair, the springs, and the seat coverings. The man was strong and deliberate in his motions. Harry stood behind a stack of junk, fascinated by the way the man opened the seats up and yanked out their guts. Finally, he showed himself. Abruptly, Tuck jerked his head in the boy's direction. "What are you doing there, boy?"
"Just watching."
"Mind your business."
Harry was buoyed by his release from captivity and blurted out a sentence.
"Didn't mean anything, mister. I just liked watching the way you were doing it."
Tuck snorted, looked around himself with disgust. "Why aren't you in school or out playing ball?"
"School's over. Don't know anybody to play ball with." Harry stuck his hands in his pockets and began to walk away.
"Come over here. I'll show you what to do."
Before the words were even out of him, Tuck saw the boy whirl around and start back to where he was working.
"What do you do with all this stuff?"
"You sell it. You sell it for scrap and it gets used again. You break things apart so that they can be used for something else."
When Tuck eyed the boy, Harry put his head down and stared at the man's split and muddy boots.
"Now, look here." Tuck lifted a car seat. "Two cuts across the back, and then two cuts across the seat."
Tuck showed the boy the entire process several times. Harry was hypnotized by the sound of the knife and the new look of the things that came out of beat-up car seats. Robert Tuck talked to him on and off, and Harry just shook his head, yes or no. He didn't want to spoil things by asking any more questions.
4. Harry disliked the Mrs. Son Don from the first day that he was brought to the Brant apartment and given a cot to sleep on in the room where Don had his bed. When Harry looked at the bureau and asked which drawer he could use, Don smirked and said, "They're all full. Besides, you ain't got no stuff." Harry showed Don his cloth bag and told him that he did have stuff. The 10-year-old boy continued to taunt him. "I don't want your smelly stuff touching anything that's mine." When Harry shoved the boy back and saw how easily he fell, it was his turn to smirk. He advanced like a shark and lifted Don by a handful of his frightened hair.
"I'm taking a drawer for my stuff. If you say anything about it, I'll bust you in the face."
Don wailed, "He's killing me in here."
Mrs. Brant had been up against bringing Harry back to her house from the start. When she heard her boy's cries, she hurried into the room and saw him sprawled on the floor. Harry was standing over him with his fists in balls, and the tip of his shoe was discharging an efficient kick into her son's stomach.
"William!" she shrieked.
She waddled up to her son and helped him up. He was bent over and holding his stomach with both hands, while tears dropped down his face. Mrs. Brandt shielded her son from Harry and waited for her husband. William Brandt did not like to be disturbed while he was sitting on the porch. The tone of her voice told him that he had to go inside, and that news didn't make him happy. "He's already made a mess of this room and kicked Donald in the face," said the woman, whose sweaty hair was stuck to the sides of her face. "I didn't kick him in the face, Pop. I didn't," shouted Harry. Brandt glared at his son for a moment and then swung hard. The blow knocked Harry to the wall, and then a big hand pinned him there. Harry smelled something strange on his father's breath. "You'll do what the missus says or you'll get a beating, Harry. This is the only time I'm gonna say it." 5. They brought Harry back to the orphanage before the end of the summer. Harry could tell that it was coming, so before he left, he knocked out 3 of Don's teeth and punched one of his eyes closed for a week. Father Bishop didn't exactly welcome him back with open arms, but he did talk to him in the office where he allowed Harry to sit on one of the leather chairs. "You've decided to send yourself back here, Harold. That doesn't say much for your ability to use the education that we have given you in a proper way. Do you know that every boy in here would have wanted the great opportunity that you just threw away?" Harry didn't answer. He didn't look up. "I do know that you are here now, and you are here for good." Struggling against our ways, Harold, would be a sinful and stupid way of behaving. Dinner is over for the evening. You'll find the others at evening prayers. I suggest you join them. The thing that Harry missed least about life in the orphanage was the prayers. But he walked to the chapel, relieved that he knew what was waiting for him. It was the next morning, on his way across the yard, that he saw Robert Tuck. Over the summer, the two had become daily companions, and Tuck had used Harry to help him increase his output. Tuck was driving a gray pickup truck with a green door. "Harry," he called up and jerked his head in a way that indicated that he wanted to talk to him. When Harry got to the truck, he said, "I ain't supposed to talk to anyone without Father Bishop say so." "Harry, I hate to see you locked up in a place like this. I'm moving on, and I'll take you with me, but you gotta come now." Harry wanted to go. It was instinctive, and he wasn't stopping to think about it. Don had been right about one thing. He didn't have any stuff. Harry climbed the short fence easily and jumped into the truck. They left New Jersey and headed for Connecticut. 6. Putnam was southern New England farm country, about 6 hours and a world outside of Newark. It was long dark before they got there because Tuck took a circuitous route that bypassed all the larger roads. The insects startled Harry, smudging the windshield and filling the headlight beams. Not wanting to ask questions, Harry stayed quiet and imagined himself winning a baseball game with a clutch hit followed by a big catch. He was unaware of Robert Tuck's eyes on him as the man wondered what he was going to tell his sister. "Harry, I want the people on the farm to treat you like one of their own. You call me Pop, and if anyone asks you, your name is Harry Tuck." "Yes, sir." Harry felt something quiver inside him, but he stuffed it back down and it went away. Vernon and Adelia ran a dairy farm. They had no children of their own, so they provided a foster home for state wards in order to get a few dollars more a month that the state provided. Adelia worked with the kids like farmhands and treated them in a way that would never let them forget their place. At meals, the family drank milk, and the state kids got water. When they visited his sister in East Haddam, the state kids got put in a double duty of chores and worked both places. There were two kinds of food on Adelia's table, family food and what she gave to the state kids. But she never hit them unnecessarily. She gave them medicine when they were sick, and they loved her. At first, Harry expected to be treated like one of the state kids. After the second meal of milk, vegetables, meat, and bread, he saw that he was like one of the family. Except for piling the manure up with old straw, Harry liked work on the farm. Each morning he would get up about 4:30 and watch Vernon milk the cows. The farmer sat on a three-legged stool, pulling his corncob pipe, looking like someone cut out of a Norman Rockwell picture. Farming is hard work, Harry, but the dirt's cleaner out here, and it's peaceful. The noises at night keep me awake, said Harry. Haven't heard any noises. Them sounds like clickers. I hear them every night. Crickets, Harry. You sure enough are from the city. Just don't seem natural somehow. Harry could watch for hours at a time without pestering. By the end of the month there, he had learned to ride on the farm horse and how to milk a cow. Proudly, he would carry the fresh pail to the vat, careful not to spill any. Robert Tuck hated farm work. Every morning, he would go off in his truck after morning chores and after breakfast and come back with a haul before lunchtime. In the afternoons, he and Harry would sort through the junk. Mostly, Tuck was collecting old bicycles and discarded car seats that he would take from wrecks wherever he could find them. Harry had become proficient at stripping the seats, and the money that Tuck got from the scrap paid for new working bicycle parts that he couldn't manufacture. Eventually, he had a collection of 20 working bicycles. Adelia, the boy and I are going to be moving on. Thomas, are you going to do that dank city again? Adelia, you can't call me Thomas anymore. It's the name that God knows you by. If you stayed away from the city, it would be a name that you could live with. We both know that isn't so. This ain't my place either. Vernon has never said a word. What kind of a place is it where a man has to make up who he is so that the authorities can't find him? There's plenty of men like me in Newark. What about the boy? Don't you think that somebody is looking for him? Nobody's looking for Harry. He's a help. Robert Tuck, alias Thomas Rondeau, alias Eddie Tuck, alias Joe Branning, left the farm in late September. They didn't go straight back to the city. Tuck needed more of a stake to execute his plan, and so they lived on the road. They stole most of their food from farms and slept on the side of the road behind billboards or clumps of trees. They rarely bathed and had no change of clothes. Harry was happy enough. Every day he practiced throwing stones, but Tuck wouldn't let him ride any of the bicycles that he kept in the bed on the truck, oiled under a canvas covering. We're saving the bicycles for the customers, Harry. A man can make a good living renting bicycles in the city. That's great, Pop. The problem that Tuck saw coming was the change in the seasons. It was getting colder. But Tuck knew that the $50 that he had managed to stash away wouldn't be enough. He was going to have to go back sooner than he liked. Harry never complained. He worked hard, kept his mouth shut, learned how to help get the food and wash himself and his clothes in the stream water. He did notice that they were moving into areas where he saw people more than he had seen them before. He didn't think about it or ask any questions. This guy's bumper is locked onto the other man's bumperette. Get a grip on the top one, Harry, and we'll bounce them together. Harry wrapped his fingers around the top bumper and stood on the bottom one. Tuck started the three count that he used when they worked together, while the two drivers tried to disengage their cars. The two of them bounced, and the metal scraped, and they bounced off, and then there was a snap and a scream. Harry was dazed. His arm was shaking, and he was very pale. When he looked down at the bloody mass of his right hand, he could only see four fingers. The middle finger was dangling underneath his palm, held on by flesh and skin and one unsevered tendon. Pop, it's broken. Harry tried to grab the finger with his left hand, but the pain shocked him like electricity, and he had to let go. Harry, it's pretty bad. We gotta get you to the hospital. Don't want no hospital, Pop. It'll get better by itself. We got no choice here, Harry. Harry was trying to stuff back tears, but it wasn't working. He put his head down and stared at his dirty boots, while the man put his arm on the boy's shoulder and wrapped the hand in a grimy towel. The hospital doctor saw the need for immediate surgery. The knuckle was crushed, and there was a good chance that the finger would have to come off. Robert Tuck stood nervously by the front desk, answering questions. Harry Tuck is his name. How old is he? About 12, guessed Tuck. Are you his father? Yes. How did it happen? He was trying to unhook these two cars that got stuck together. Have a seat, Mr. Tuck. The doctor be with you when he can. We're very busy. Tuck thought about walking out the door. He thought about Adelia and what she'd said to him. But he sat down and waited. He always felt uneasy around people like this. They had rules that they never told you about until it was too late. After the operation that managed to save the finger, Harry developed osteomyelitis. The bone infection kept him in the hospital for 2 months. Then he came down with rheumatic fever. He was moved to the hospital for contagious diseases. It was summer again before he got out. Tuck took a furnished room and spent the winter splitting cars with an acetylene torch. He would visit Harry every month. By the next summer, the 10-year-old boy, who now thought he was 13, found that Tuck had opened the bicycle rental and repair shop. Harry was brought to his first diner that summer. He loved it immediately. Harry and Robert Tuck sat at the counter on swivel stools and read the menu board. Harry couldn't believe that he got to choose what he wanted to eat. He watched the meat sizzling on the grill and smelled the steaming soup. He stared at the stack of clean plates, glittering knives and forks, and spoons. They looked like sacred instruments. He spun around on the chair and watched the other patrons and heard pieces of conversation. His eyes got wide when the cash register opened, and then the most magical ring from all around him. There was music, as someone used the jukebox. Harry's smile moved his ears back as he bit into his burger. They went to the diner twice a day. Tuck struck a deal with the owner and paid his tab once a week. Harry was allowed to go on his own and have a blue plate special any day that Robert wasn't around. George Lafer owned the Washington Diner, and he slowly got to know Harry. One day he said, "How old are you, kid?" 13. "Would you like to make some money?" Harry smiled his most winning smile. "Sure. What do you need done?" "I need a dishwasher that I can trust to show up here every morning and after supper. I'll pay you $1 a day." "When can I start?" "Right now," said Laffer.